to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You know, we've been talking a lot about change. How do you make change in your own life? 100 years ago, change was far slower and less encompassing than it is now. And yet there have been tools for divining whether we're on the right path for centuries. Perhaps you've heard of the I Ching, such a tool that originated from China in approximately 1000 BC, and it was translated for Westerners in about 1950, and yet it's still useful today. The I Ching played a big part in the life of Sandra Billings, the protagonist of Broadway actress and business person Andrea Adler's book, Pushing Upward. Andrea Adler is our guest on Full Power Living today. So welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that's dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host. During this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our two chats, one on emotionalpro.com on the radio show page and the other on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858. That's 800-630-7858, and you can call in toll-free and talk with Andrea today. Now, Andrea Adler is the author of Pushing Upward, which is her breakout novel, and it's been published by Hay House. It's also the winner of the 2012 Los Angeles Book Festival Award. Congratulations. Andrea is also an international speaker, a workshop presenter, and she's founder of HolisticPR.com. She's referred to as a metaphysical marketer and has written 3 books on her holistic methodology, and she's also supported entrepreneurs, small business owners, and cultural creatives for the past 20 years. She currently travels presenting lectures, teaching meditation, and she has a workshop called Pushing Upward into Your Best Life. You can find her on the web. One of the places you can find her is pushingupward.com. Andrea Adler, welcome to Full Power Living.
Wow, I feel so old after that bio. Did I do all that? Yeah, not to mention Broadway actress, journalist, a few other lifetimes in this lifetime. But it's exciting to be creative and, you know, just putting yourself out there in all these different ways. I'm finding life so exciting these days. It's incredible.
I agree.
Thank you for having me on the show. It sounds wonderful, and I love that you focus on the emotional aspect of our lives, because that really does motivate me and many other people to create and produce, is that
right.
Desire to express our feelings.
Absolutely. So, in fact, I often talk about emotions as the language of the universe. They're, in my opinion, emotions are part of everything that gets created, including us.
Well, I always say there are 3 minds. There's the mind of the head, the mind of the heart, and the mind of the gut. And
right.
I trust the mind of the gut more than anything, because that's where my emotions sit.
Well, you know, some years ago, Andrea, I attended a workshop that was led by Lazarus of Concept Synergy, and he said that starting then, which I think was maybe mid-90s or earlier, that every year our individual intuition was going to multiply, it was going to develop. So it seems to me that more and more people are probably able to get into contact with that gut, and maybe it's less and less possible to ignore it too, which I think is interesting.
Oh, absolutely. And we are forced and faced with a time period right now that is not letting us off the hook in any way, shape, or form. And so whatever our destiny is, it's now the time to reinvent ourselves and move forward with our bucket list, so to speak. That's what I'm doing. You know, not only have I written this novel, I have just finished a screenplay based on the novel, and I'm now starting starting a documentary that has to do with divination and all these divine intervention tools that we've been using throughout centuries that you had mentioned, each being one of them. So it's a very exciting time right now.
It is. It is. I'm having trouble with the sound to our producer.
Ah, I'm not, is that better?
You were going in and out.
Okay.
I'm very interested in the I Ching. As a 20-year-old, I took a job as a secretary in the China Project at the University of Washington in Seattle. And part of my job was to take notes at a colloquium. Okay, my producer says there's something about your phone that's not working, Andrea.
Huh, I'm on my landline, so
okay.
He's not hearing me well?
Well, just check your connections. You for a little bit, you were fading in and out.
Okay.
So
yeah, I'll just keep the phone close.
Okay, good. At any rate, I took this job as a 20-year-old, a young married woman, and I worked at I was the secretary for the China Project at the University of Washington in Seattle. And there was a man named Helmut Wilhelm, who was a professor there. He turns out to be the son of Richard Wilhelm, who made one of the first translations into a Western language of the I Ching.
Yes, it was Wilhelm and Baines.
Right.
Wilhelm translated the quintessential I Ching book from Chinese to German, and Baines is the one that translated it from German to English. So this has been the quintessential book and the book Sandra Billings used in pushing forward and the book I have used for the past 30 years.
Yes, and, you know, I was so naive. I loved Helmut Wilhelm was a wonderful man. I loved him, but I had no clue.
His background, who he was affiliated with, that's fantastic. What an opportunity you had.
Yeah, and my boss had me sit in on the, first of all, I would type a paper. They had a colloquium every week, and the papers ran from about 60 to 100 pages. So it was my job to type those up on those old mimeograph things, you know, and then run off copies, get them around to the professors. And then my boss insisted that I sit in on the colloquium and take notes. And I realized after a while that he'd never looked at the notes. So I started taking them in shorthand.
Well, you know, the history of the I Ching, it is known to be one of China's most mystical spiritual texts.
Uh-huh.
And one of the fundamental principles used by philosophers and politicians and mystics and yogis and scientists and mathematicians. And as you mentioned, it was created at the end of the second millennium.
Uh-huh.
So based on Taoism and Confucianism, this book has been universally regarded as the sole property of, you know, any religion, cult, or school of, you know, it's not a religion per se. It's a philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And an incredible divination tool.
Yes. Yeah, I've used it. I did eventually learn to use it. So, you know, pushing upward is a very easy and compelling read, and I found it hard to put it down until I finished the whole thing. And I believe
my ear.
I believe you told me that you're getting that feedback a lot. And there's a lot of information, a huge amount of information, wisdom hidden within the fiction. So I'd like to understand what your aim was in writing Pushing Upward and why you chose to embed that wisdom in fiction.
Well, I must say that this entire story was inspired by my own story. I'm calling it fiction because I have taken the liberty to embellish and exaggerate some of the things that really happened. So I wanted to, you know, just be able to have that freedom to do that without calling it a true story.
I see. So you had an Emma in your life?
I absolutely had an Emma in my life. I placed an ad in the LA Times exactly like I describe in the story.
I hope you didn't have all those horrible experiences.
I did have most of those experiences, which is why I'm able to articulate them in so much detail.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not going to reveal what they are, but they were, you know, you put an ad, a drama student willing to work for room and board, you put that in the newspaper, and let me tell you, all kinds of strange, creepy...
crazy, dangerous men, a few zany women, and then this mysterious, incredible 80-year-old woman answers the ad. I move in with her, and both our lives change.
Uh-huh. Now, Sandra Billings is presented as a really untogether 21-year-old. She's being evicted from the place she lives. She's driving an ancient Fiat. She doesn't stay conscious about what she's eating. She's emotionally dependent on other people, including her best friend, Rachel. Was that you, or was that where you exaggerated and created a character so that you could work?
There were certainly parts of me in there as a waif in the wind coming from small town to a big city with big passions and desires to fulfill my destiny as an actress. I mean, I had a lot of talent and a lot of perseverance, and I was going to make it. And, you know, I didn't, as they say, screw their way to the top. I wanted to do it legitimately, study really hard, work with great teachers, and yet financially, you know, I needed a way to support myself. Emotionally, Sandra had very little support from her family, and so she was looking for love and support and somebody or people that would see her talent and help her move. You know, we don't live in a society, unfortunately, then in the 70s or even now today, where we as artists can do our art, you know, create without the tension and the exasperation of earning a living while we're creating. I mean, my son is a musician, very talented guy. And, you know, struggles all the time with, you know, wanting to move to that next level and not having the financial support to do that.
Whereas I know, yeah.
Other countries, you know, the government supports their artists, which is why today we have so many people from Australia and England coming to our film scene because they're relaxed.
You
they
know,
don't
I
have angst that, you know, Americans have to go through just to get their Screen Actors Guild card. You know what I mean?
Well, one of my stepdaughters actually has a Screen Actors Guild card, so I know something about that. But my sister, who passed away in 2005, was a dancer. And when she decided to go into dance, she told me point blank, our culture, our country does not support art. If you are going to be an artist, you have to take a vow of poverty. But at the same time, she would go to Germany for half the year, where the government, and this was pre-influx of you know, them opening up to East Germany, which put more of a stress on them. But the government not only supported artists, but supported people to take time off during the year, every year, in order to explore things other than their jobs.
What a concept.
Yeah.
I mean, I even had my son not go to school one day a month.
Oh, I did that too.
Do what he wanted to do, whether it was to veg in front of the TV or use his Legos or go for a picnic. I said, this is your day. And he never was sick and having to stay from school because of that.
That's really interesting. I did that with my children too, and it just seemed to help them stay more balanced. I agree with you.
You know, I wrote another book called I hate to segue out of Pushing Upward, which I hope we'll come back to. But I wrote this book called The Science of Spiritual Marketing: Initiation to Magnetism. It's part of my holistic PR thing, and one of the chapters is called The Three Stages of Creativity. And it's based on the Hindu triad, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And these are three aspects of our creative mode that we are faced with every single day, sometimes minute by minute, month by month, year by year. And Brahma, for instance, is the visioning stage. It's what Germany is allowing their people to do by taking time off and envisioning next steps or envisioning a project that they want to participate in. And then the next phase is Vishnu, watering that idea, really starting to work on that project. Now, some of us can get very myopic in Brahma and go into visioning stage for years and never get anything mm-hmm. done. We know those people.
Yes.
Vishnu, which is getting to work, we can become myopic and not go back into Brahma and vision, or move into the third stage, which is Shiva, knowing when to walk away, knowing when to leave the computer because you've worked so many hours on a chapter or a project, and if you keep on working beyond that cessation point, you will start making mistakes, you'll have to do it over. So it's these three stages that we need to be very cognizant of in whatever creative activity we are immersed in. And mm-hmm. so I love the fact that you brought that up, and I think about these stages all the time because we are constantly moving in and out of them. And in that tradition is also Nataraj, dancing Shiva. And that's where we get to when we are cognizant of these three stages, because dancing Shiva incorporates them all the time and is dancing with them flawlessly, gracefully, just in a very magical way, and knowing when to move in and out of them.
Mm. That's a lovely statement. I know what the I Ching is, and you do. However, I think perhaps many of our listeners might not know. Now, the other name for the I Ching is the Book of Changes. And basically, you throw some coins, or originally some sticks, and if you throw coins, you have heads and tails, and you put a horizontal line of a particular description across the page until you have six of them, a hexagram, and then you look it up in the book, and it tells you what
the hexagram stands for.
Yeah, what the hexagram.
So I'm going to start over a little bit. So
ask a question. I forgot that part.
Yeah, what the I Ching requires is that you think of a question, and the way you phrase the question is even more important than the answer itself. And so I always like to start the question with, whatever the question is this for my highest good? You know, I'm thinking about moving. Is moving now for my highest good? Or I'm thinking about buying a car. Is this the right time? And would this be for my highest good? We always want it to be for our highest good. And when we phrase it that way, we can understand the answer from a higher perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I love particularly this quintessential book, The I Ching, The Book of Changes by Wilhelm Baines, even though it has a sexist connotation, mm-hmm. which is old school, and there are many more modern interpretations, because of the layers and the metaphors that come forth in the answers. They're mm-hmm. magical, they are imaginative, and they answer questions that sometimes we don't even know to ask. So many times I'll ask a question and it answers another question mm-hmm. that was deeper inside me that I didn't even know to ask. Okay. And so you ask the question first. You take your coins, which are much easier to use than the yarrow stalks that were used in the olden days, and you cast the coins six times. And with each throw, there is a definitive line that is drawn that can be detected if you go to pushingupward.com, or it's in the back of the Pushing Upward book, and you can see if it's a straight line or a broken line. And you start at the bottom and throw the coins six times, layering upward each throw, and whether it's a broken line or a straight line. Once you have all six lines, you then go to the back of the I Ching book, and it will show you exactly where to look up your answer, what number it is. Mm-hmm. So for instance, Number 46, when I threw it on, should I move in with this elderly woman, was pushing upward. And then it gives a description of that answer, which absolutely said, go for it.
Yes, yeah.
A few words. And so Sandra, you know, what Sandra used this book because she wanted to get in touch with the underlying forces that were at work in her life. She is, in essence, a very spiritual being and had a very hard time living in the world and connecting with Source.
Mm-hmm.
That was her biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps Sandra to look at these forces from a different, broader perspective rather than from her own narrow vision, and it opened up her to new insights.
Yes, beautifully done. We actually are up to our first break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about Emma, the character in the book, and her interaction with Sandra, and all that that opens up, especially in terms of intergenerational mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're talking with the metaphysical marketer, Andrea Adler, who is an international speaker, a workshop presenter, founder of HolisticPR.com, and author of the spiritual fiction, Pushing Upward. And no matter what your age, there is a message for you in this book, and we'll be talking about it later in the show. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on EmotionalPro.com. And next week is Thanksgiving, so we will broadcast no live show, and we invite you to listen to any of our archive shows that you may have missed. On November 29th, I'll be returning to talk to Nancy Duterte, who's known as the skeptical psychic, about psychic intuition. She has a very unique take on psychic intuition, which I know you'll enjoy hearing. Join us for this and for all the shows of Full Power Living. And we really thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Remember that if you miss the live broadcast, you can listen on the archives, and you can also subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. Today, we're talking with Andrea Adler, the metaphysical marketer, about ideas and wisdom from her book, a spiritual fiction called Pushing Upward, that is published by Hay House. Now, Andrea, before the break, I indicated that I would love to hear you talk more about Emma. So we've already suggested here that Sandra Billings puts an ad in the paper. She finds a whole lot of kooky people and finally is contacted by an 80-year-old woman named Emma, who's living in
the last person I ever thought I would want to live with. And at first, I actually thought she was about 50 or 60, and the thought of living with my mother was not appetizing at all.
But she became, at least in the book, she becomes a mentor for Sandra. She gets her into physical training. She teaches her to cook. She introduces her to people she needs to know in her acting career. Tell us more about this.
You know, I think the most profound situation I found myself in, and Sandra found herself in, was the fact that there was this juxtaposition of this little frail woman with dynamic spiritual power. Her house, which she first described as very palatial, was very small, filled with her husband's paintings. I mean, you could hardly step through the house. So everything visually seemed very contracted and small. But in essence, it was walking into a huge, magnificent universe that Sandra could feel stepping in and knew that her life was about to change in monumental ways, even though she was looking at something very tight and contracted. There was an expansion in that home that she was willing to explore.
Well, I found it delightful that Emma was taking stopwatch and pushing Sandra Billings to go out and run track and develop her lungs, and, you know, really points out that if you're going to be an artist, you know, I think having been a psychotherapist for 40 years and now, you know, having a sister who's a dancer and a couple of daughters who are in the acting business, I have, and another friend who's a singer, I realize that if you're going to do those kinds of creative things, you have to keep your body in good shape.
Well, the body is the instrument. You know, even my son, who's a drummer and composer, you know, has to work on his mind, you know, as a composer, has to work on his physical body so he doesn't develop carpal tunnel with his hands doing repetitive movement on the drums. So he has to move his body in ways that he doesn't do while he's sitting and drumming. In the same way, as an actor, that's all you have. It's not a trumpet or a fiddle or something outside of yourself. Your body is the instrument. I think actors are the most are the healthiest people on the planet because they get to really expose their emotions. I always felt very emotionally healthy when I was doing a lot of acting and improvisational theater because I didn't have to keep anything inside.
I could
get angry, I could laugh hysterically, and, you know, hopefully it was appropriate for the character I was portraying, but it's very healthy to relieve yourself of these emotions. I mean, I think a lot of people are chanting right now because they're not in professions that allow them to express their emotions.
Oh, that's really wonderful. Not only that, what I've noticed is that each character that you play has an emotional makeup that, as a good actor, you have to get into and explore and be part of, which sets you up to feel things that you might not want to feel, or it might stimulate you to feel something that you didn't know was inside of you.
That is very true. It's actually one of the reasons I stopped acting as a profession.
Too
was
much, huh?
Because the last thing I was given an opportunity to play was a soap opera and playing a bitch. And I knew that if I were to be repeating these words on an ongoing basis, that my liver would become very toxic. And interestingly enough, I was going to a colonic therapist, as I still do, and she said, oh, yes, I get a lot of actors and actresses in here who have colon problems because of the acting jobs that they are taking and the characters that they are portraying.
Oh, my goodness. That's
what I haven't
heard. Yeah.
So I knew even though I was on Broadway, I was reaching the pinnacle of my career, I could have taken off big time from that place. While I'm auditioning for the soap opera, I hear this voice say, no more repeating other people's words.
Ooh, nice.
And nice. I stopped. And I went to India for 6 months. And I came back very transformed and started businesses, which is how Holistic PR got started. And then I became a journalist and started my writing career.
Well, clearly you have a lot of talent and abilities, which I'm going to assume that most of us have, but you have taken the time to explore them.
The most important piece here is the courage to listen to your own drumbeat. And a lot of people say, you're my hero, Andrea, you're so courageous, you make it look so easy. Well, it's not so easy. And I have taken a lot of chances. I gamble every day with my career in many ways. You know, I have took so many years writing this novel because it was so close to me.
Mm-hmm.
That I needed the distance to separate myself from understanding what the story was about and why I had to take so many years to write it and what the passion was. It started with saying thank you to this woman who gave me so much love, more love than I ever received from anyone, and I received it from a stranger.
You know, I was going to ask you to read a passage from your book that was exactly about that. Do you have the book, or do you want me to read it?
I don't have one up here, but let me see if I can bring up a document.
Okay, it's on page 59, and it's the story of making potato pancakes.
Okay, let me see if I can bring this up.
And I was going to suggest that you start in the last paragraph on 59. There's, you know, a statement, seeing my own hands in the mixing bowl. And read all the way through to the end, perhaps leaving out, just for matters of time, the issues about Zelda and Max.
So starting with the intervening years?
You can do that, yes.
The intervening years disappeared as she handed me the eggs and showed me how to break them, using the round part of the spoon and then dropping the yellow eye and the clear liquid into the bowl. Plop! I stirred the mixture. Seeing my own hands in the mixing bowl brought tears to my eyes as I stood there next to this woman. I didn't realize how much I had missed not cooking with my own mother, not being initiated into the secret of how to bring these formless globs of goop into the perfect cookie or pancake or whatever she was making. I always wanted to be one of those globs that received all of her attention. I always wanted to be the batter, because that batter seemed to be getting a lot more of my mother's love and attention than I ever did. We need to drain the mix, form small balls, and then flatten them with a spatula once they're in the skillet, Emma said, a note of compassion in her voice, understanding, and probably not for the first time, that I might be more fragile than she was. Be careful not to drain out too much moisture, otherwise the pancake will be too dry, she added. I watched Emma's hands dive into the batter, add a little flour, and cup the mixture with her thin, veined fingers as she squeezed out the excess liquid and placed the drained mix in the oiled skillet. They weren't my mother's hands. They were Emma's. But at least they were here, guiding me, showing me not only how to make this dish, but how to drop my fear and nervousness with respect to this alien room called the kitchen and accept the possibility of intimacy, even if it was with a semi-stranger. Should I go on?
Yeah. If you would do the next two lines and then skip down to the paragraph that says both our hands.
Okay. Should we taste one? Emma asked excitedly. One? Let's taste 10. Taste as many as you like. It'll be a few minutes before Zelda's here.
Then there's that
both
last...
Both her hands
yeah.
reached the refrigerator door at the same time. Her soft hand taking hold of mine brought shivers to my skin. Our eyes met, and the woman from the newspaper ad smiled. my eyes filled with tears. I never experienced this kind of patience, this sweetness, anywhere, from anyone.
I have chills.
It was really true. I mean, it was extraordinary to have somebody be there for me. It was such a strange, foreign experience.
Uh-huh.
Why, and then we don't find out till later why she was so present for me.
Yes. And that's such a surprise ending. I want to be sure to insist that people read the book instead of finding out from us.
Oh, the incredible stuff
that happened.
You know, another thing that was very interesting, you know, because it had taken me so many years to write the story and needed the distance, it was done 10 years ago, really.
Mm-hmm.
And an agent was very interested in it then, and it just wasn't the right time for the universe to experience this book. So I had to wait. Didn't pick it up for another 7 or 8 years, picked it up again and realized that everything had, the energy of the universe had changed. And what I had written was all good, but it had to be speeded up for the
uh-huh.
people to read it today. So I had to go back into the story and just like have it be like a horse race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we have to speed this up. People are not reading like they were 10 years ago. They don't have time. They want to get the messages quickly. And I went back and I just, like, gave it a haircut.
Wow. Wow, that's very interesting. That is really
otherwise
interesting.
It would be too slow. I mean, I, like, elaborated on many of the things that no longer needed to be elaborated on.
Mm-hmm.
And it
now,
cut to the chase. Yeah.
One of the themes, there are several themes that come up again and again in the book, and one of them is about fear, speaking about emotions. Different people seem to be afraid to be alone or to take chances, to be their authentic selves, to learn new skills like what we just read about, even to throw themselves fully into what they're doing. And I had this thought to ask you, what do you hope people will learn about fear from reading your book?
You know, that's a very interesting question, and I can't answer that for everyone because everyone has their own ideas of what their fear is about. However, the feedback that I'm getting is so diverse. One man actually picked up this book, read it on a subway, ended up in the bathroom of the subway of the Grand Central Station crying for 3 hours.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Because it had rekindled something that he didn't complete with his own father. We don't know how books affect us. I don't know. I know there are many messages in this book. I wasn't here to tell that story. This wasn't a how-to book. This was my own experience going through revelation, just finally being able to relax in someone's embrace that I had never been able to experience before. It was so big for me. I mean, even today, I don't remember feeling that kind of love other than my own meditation teacher and my experience living in an ashram. But other than that, I have not had those experiences.
Right. And as an actress, I suspect that you really, there's an acceptance as well as a faith in the power of story to move people to feel what they're going to feel.
It's our job as an actor. That's
mm-hmm.
our job. As a writer, that's also our job
uh-huh.
to tell a story in a way that keeps it moving. I mean, what's interesting for me now is going from writing nonfiction books, finishing the novel, and now writing the screenplay, it's a whole different animal. How do we keep that story moving in a visual way, not like a novel where you have all this subtext. You have to show, not tell, in a script.
I can see how you're taking chances here, constantly challenging yourself. You know, we're up to our second break, and I want, when we come back, Andrea, the character of Emma demonstrates something we don't value so much in this culture, which is the wisdom and importance of older people, and I want to explore that with you for a little bit when we come back.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're talking today with the author of Pushing Upward, Andrea Adler, and we'll be back with more after these messages here on Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
That emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years. Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. We're talking today with metaphysical marketer and author of Pushing Upward, Andrea Adler. Now, Andrea, before the break, I was asking you, I have a son who's 35, and I recently had an interaction with him and his family in which he turned to me and said, "You are the family elder. You're the one who has the wisdom, Mom. I need your help here. I want you to share that with me."
And that's a high compliment.
It was great. It was great. And that's what it surprised me. I mean, because he had to go to do some business of his, and he just walked off and left me. "You make the decision. Treat my child as if she were me," he said, and walked away.
Wow.
And I did, and he later told me it was the decision he really wanted me to make. So that was
great.
Right. But you go into, you know, you really present Emma in Pushing Upward to as a person with a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom. She doesn't tout it a whole lot. She just shares it. And talk to us about what maybe you learned in having someone offer you that.
Well, you look at our society today and you see how our elderly are treated. I mean, it's so distasteful. We don't honor them like they do in other traditions, like the American Indian, like the elders from, you know, many other traditions are just honored and revered, and we hide them. We stick them into homes that are not nourishing mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, and it's very, very sad. It's one of the things that I want to focus on when this book hits a certain plateau, and that is to work with already existing organizations that have set up mentoring programs for the youth reaching out to the elderly and the elderly reaching out to the youth.
Mm.
We have so many great youth programs, Boys and Girls Club, Girls Inc., Step Up. How are they relating and communicating and being present for the elderly? And whether we have wonderful parents and grandparents, there are a lot of lonely elders with so much wisdom to share. We're not utilizing their gifts and their stories. Their stories are incredible. And this is one woman who had so much to share and shared with me and elevated my consciousness, gave me the space to learn who I was through that wisdom. And you're right, she wasn't didactic, she wasn't overbearing. She gave me so much space to learn about who I was. How many opportunities do we have for that to take place?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely, Andrea. We have Dakey on the line who wants to ask you a question. Dakey, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Oh, great. Boy, I'm really enjoying this discussion, and especially this turn towards the use of the elderly or the incredible wisdom of our accumulated experience. And when you started, I had the recognition of how back in the 70s, I saw the I Ching being thrown all over the place. And yet, in a way, it's gone out of style compared to all of the verbal and interactive equivalents that's come along. And as you're talking now about the elderly, I'm just wondering if you feel, too, that the world has become a place that nurtures us in the way that Emma nurtured you, and that by what you're suggesting here, we're bringing that into activity now, too.
Before you go on, because you have multiple concerns here, which I'm very excited about, that you brought up.
And that's
one
who she is.
One is, in the 70s, it was the spiritual revolution. We had just come out of the Vietnam War. We were no longer seeing things in black and white like they were before. We were really starting to question things, question ourselves, question our motives, question the world, our government. And so the I Ching and other divination tools became very important. They were our psychologists and our psychiatrists because we couldn't afford anything else.
Uh-huh.
And so they became our divination tools to help us reveal our own unconscious. What has happened since then, and by the way, there were a few publishers and agents that wanted me to place this story in the present. I went, no way, Jose. This is time that was so relevant that baby boomers today will reflect on and go, whoa, do I remember that period? And here's a gift to my child who might want to see what that time was like, because it's happening again now, which is why I feel this book is such a zeitgeist. There's the whole China thing that's going on that's very prevalent today, and they haven't even acknowledged their own history, which is the I Ching. When Mao took office, he wanted to block out anything that happened prior to his existence. And that still goes on today. So very few people in China, the youth, know about I Ching. It's
wow.
Insane. So we have that going on. Throughout the years, the I Ching has been used by many, many followers. I have met a lot of devotees of I Ching and Tarot and numerology and the ruins and all these divination tools. But because we are now in this communication era and the internet and so much information, these things have, you know, sort of gone on the wayside. And we can afford psychologists and psychiatrists, and we think that's going to answer our questions. But believe me, when I come out with this documentary called The Art, the Genesis of Divination, The Art of Divine Intervention, and remind people of these tools, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting what happens with this book, because the I Ching is just one divination tool. We all are attracted to different ones. The Tarot may be of interest to those artists because of the visuals on the cards and the archetypes that these visuals embellish. For me, it was always about words and metaphors and the layers that are in the context of the I Ching. So I love the question that you've asked, and you know, it brings us around to the wisdom of these elders and how this information that so many of them have to share with us, so we're not making the same mistakes, is not available. So we have to seek it out. And I hope that this book brings that to people's awareness, and that more organizations, the youth and the elderly, come together. And I hope that that becomes a platform for me to talk about, because it's huge.
Yes, and is that then, is there anything else you want to say about what you might hope or what your own vision into action might yield in bringing this particular gift to, let's call it, the society in the way that you understand it so deeply?
Oh, my
as
God, I don't sleep at night with all the ideas that flow through my brain. Mainly because this book, literally, and when I talk about it as the zeitgeist, reaches seven different demographics. It reaches the teens and young adults. And actually, you brought that up when you first started the radio announcement, is that there isn't anybody who wouldn't relate to this book from any age. It's
right.
True. The teens and young adults who want to know what it's going to be like to be 21. We have the baby boomers who will reflect on their past when they lived during the 70s. They'll want to hopefully give it as a gift to their own child. We have seniors. We have the divination people, the new agers, the metaphysical people. We have women who are, and men who are having issues with eating disorders. We have rape victims. And we have actors and actresses who need to know how to navigate their own careers and stay in their bodies and stay truthful to themselves and still be able to jump off and become somebody else. How do we do that and keep our own equipoise and equanimity? How do we do that?
Uh-huh.
So I would love to speak with actors and actresses. I would love to speak with rape victims. I actually wrote a blog called 50 Shades of Rape, because there are people who have been raped over and over and over, and there are people who have been raped just once. And it doesn't matter, because what happens is, even if it's one time, this little encounter affects one's entire life. And it has at least 50 shades. There becomes intimacy issues, self-sabotage, eating disorders, people move into drug abuse, tendencies toward alcohol abuse, inability to feel self-empowered, prone to cutting, lack of focus, underachieving, overachieving. It goes on and on and on.
But let me interject something there. If you were to take those people and put them into situations where they would act so that they could express their feelings, do you think that would help them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I actually taught when I was, I had a children's theater company, another profession I have for 8 years.
That's not listed.
I was given a grant from Senator Cook in upstate New York to have a children's theater company due to the fact that 3 suicides occurred at a local high school. And I had this explosion go off inside me, and the voice said, do something about it. And I went, huh? Sat down, wrote a grant, and received $60,000 for 8 years to teach kids, because there was no cultural activities going on in this area. People were drugging and having sex and drinking and not having anything else to do. So I went, let's fill the void here and start this children's theater company. And as a result, for running this company for 8 years, these kids no longer had these issues because they were emoting, they were expressing themselves, they were given improvisational theater games to really explode into who they were and wanted to become. Mm-hmm. And these kids went off to win awards and become extemporaneous debate speakers. I mean, it was extraordinary to watch this. And so while I was doing this, I was also working at drug and alcohol rehabilitation facilities and watching them transform with a certain game that allowed them to slow down before they used and become cognizant of the choices they had. Now, most of drug and alcohol abusers are speeding through life, not being conscious, doing things from a knee-jerk reaction, and therefore not realizing they have choices other than to use. And by offering this little game of slowing them down into slow motion before they used or picked up or took that needle or grabbed that glass or bottle, they realized they had choices, and they were stunned, and that changed them forever.
Wow. Well, Dakey, thank you for your questions.
You're welcome.
All right. And, you know, the time has passed, Andrea.
We're going to have to set up another session because we've only reached, you know, a few of these demographics here.
Yeah, that's true. And I also was thinking when you get the Genesis of Divination done, that I would really love to talk with you about that.
Thank you.
So, yes, we'll invite you back. It's just been a pleasure. But we have to let go of you today, and that's part of what Sandra Billings had to do with Emma, too. She had to do some letting go.
Go into Shiva and let go.
Right. So let me remind you who are listening that the book of Andrea Adler's book is Pushing Upward. You can find her on Facebook, on Twitter, and at pushingupward.com.
And Amazon.
And Amazon. Thank you. And I want to thank you for bringing your creativity and your lightness of being to the world, which really comes through in your book, Pushing Upward, and certainly comes through when I'm talking with you in person. I feel so grateful that we have so many conscious people working to help others to navigate the transition we're all part of, and you are... you've obviously been doing that for quite some time, and I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing.
Thank you so much for having the show that you have and for being the messenger for this and all of us. Thank you so much for doing your part.
Good. Well, come back and be with us on Full Power Living again, Andrea. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
All right. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. In the meantime, sign up to listen to our archives on emotionalpro.com. Remember that next week you're going to be having a happy Thanksgiving. I hope you and all of your relatives and friends have a warm and joyous and supportive experience. And then come back on November 29th when we talk with Nancy Duterte about psychic intuition. She calls herself the skeptical psychic, which puts an interesting twist on the whole thing. Paul and Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media are our producers. Robin has been on duty today. Thank you so much, Robin. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope you have lots of appreciation for yourself. I discovered a couple of years ago that I was actually born on Thanksgiving Day. I didn't know that previously. And so I'm going to be grateful for my life on Thanksgiving Day. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon. You're listening listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.